Radio Ghana.
And live from our national studios here in Accra, and linking up with all our regional FM stations, and also live on the internet at gbcghana.com. We say welcome to Behind the News, where we speak to the newsmakers and experts. My name is Kinsley Obinchere. For tonight, should the computer selection and placement system be abolished? If so, what should replace it? Did Akufo-Addo instruct Cameron in number 10 Downing Street about what not to say? And what is happening with the digital migration? What does it mean to be on, and what are the emerging challenges? Behind the News, coming to you live from our national studios here, and we are also live on Sunrise Radio Kofodria and also Twin City Secondary Takoradi. Is the computerized school selection placement system CSSPS about to be given the death penalty? Some groups in the country are calling for the system to be abolished. Before the latest call by the Catholic Bishops Conference, some parents had cause to raise concerns with the system, saying it was fraught with corruption. With the public outcry against the system, the question is, what is the workable alternative? We just want to seek the views of the experts in the area. And we have joining us now on the line the former Director General of the Ghana Education Service, Michael Nsoa. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
You were there when the placement system was initiated. Is that the truth?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yes. Do you find anything wrong with that system?
No, I don't find anything wrong. Just that there are challenges, and it comes from both sides. You know, when people fill the forms, you know, we are in a computer age, and therefore we cannot afford to continue to, you know, do the selection manually. But when people fill the forms, and they unfortunately give the wrong code, because the computer understand the code. For example, every school has a code. So, for example, you have a lot of Presbyterian secondary schools. So, if, for instance, your choice is Presec Legon, but because there are a lot of Presbyterian secondary schools, and you code in Presec Osu, the machine or the placement will be to Presec Osu. It doesn't mean somebody has interfered with their placement, because many a time when people challenge this and then the forms are brought up, it turns out that they did the wrong code. Last year, for example, or 2 years ago, there was a girl who topped the whole of the BC, and actually chose Wesley Girls. Well, her intention was to go to Wesley Girls, Cape Coast. Unfortunately, now we have Wesley Girls Kumasi, Wesley Girls Sopon, Wesley Girls Tema, and so on. And the coding was for Wesley Girls Kumasi. And it came as a shock to the parents, because certainly there was no way this girl was not going to go to Wesley Girls Cape Coast. But because the person who assisted in, you know, shading the code, the code that is for Wesley Girls Kumasi, the machine placed in Wesley Girls Kumasi. And I was like, oh, you and cry. And when the forms were checked, it turns out that, well, that's why, you know, the machine understands only one language, garbage in, and then the garbage will come out. That's it.
Yeah, so you're talking about these challenges, and certainly it's been with us since the system came into place. Does that mean the level of education that should go with it and the awareness that should be created is not being carried out very well?
You see, every year when we are doing the, you know, the filling of the forms, a lot of effort goes into it. In fact, we do it across the country. The teams move from one region to the other, meeting stakeholders, and hopefully they will also carry it down to the people. But incidentally, when we are doing these things, many people don't seem to be interested until the challenges arise, and then they start, you know, creating and making you and cry about it. So maybe if people will now do this filling of forms with a lot of concentration, I mean, we'll continue to have these challenges.
Yeah. Can you take us through exactly what is done when we are talking about the computer selection and placement system?
What is done is very simple. You have a choice. choose any school that you think you can compete. Mind you, there's a lot of competition. For instance, I'm told that 12,000 girls chose Westgate. 1,000 of them got aggregate 6. And therefore, you can imagine, Westgate, I am told, was also going to, can accommodate only 300. So then it becomes, now they are using the raw scores so as to do the ranking. And so when they do the ranking of the 1,000, at 300, they have to stop. And certainly people will continue to cry that, look, my child got aggregate 6. Yes, they got aggregate 6, all right, but it's not easy. So you have a choice. Initially, there were only 3 choices. And candidates were advised not to select 2 big schools. Because, for instance, if you select in Accra, if you select Achimota and select Prestec, the competition in these schools are very high. And therefore, if you are unfortunate with your 6 ones and you don't get in, certainly you feel peeved, but that is not it. Because there may be more than 800 people competing for the program that you've chosen, science or arts.
Yeah. Mr. Michael Nsua, we'd just like to hold you on briefly because we are getting the president of CHAS, Mr. Samuel Ofori J. In fact, he's getting out of a meeting to speak to us, but we'll come to you in a jiffy. So please hold on the line for us. Good evening, Mr. Ofori J.
Good evening.
Certainly, there's been some calls for the school system to revert to what it used to do previously, or perhaps even adopt a new one altogether. Being the chairman of CHAS, or the president of CHAS, do you find anything wrong with what is existing presently?
Which of the systems particularly?
That is the CSSPS, computer selection.
Okay, okay. The CSSPS was started in 2005. We've gone through this system and we've virtually seen what the ups and downs are. We were very much involved in the early days. In fact, I represented CHAS at the Technical Working Committee in 2005, 2006, before I became the president. The idea behind the CSSPS is perfect, very, very perfect, because it has to do with performance. Because if 10 people have chosen a particular school and the school can take, say, 3 students, all things being equal, we should rank them and the best 3 should go to the school. And that is what the CSSPS basically was meant to do. And that brings a lot of transparency into the system. But I must add that the problem is not with the system, but rather the operators of the system. People are not ready to accept what the system turns out. If we put the number of students who are selected, say, Accra Academy, into the system and it's run, and the order of merit is used, you still have others who think that they must necessarily be in that school. So all I can say for now is that if we, the human beings, and we are not leaving out anybody, we are not leaving out anyone, right from the top to the bottom, if we would allow the system to work, I think it's one of the best things which has happened to us as far as admissions into the senior high school is concerned. So I think we should rather make the system work instead of saying we are scrapping it altogether.
So, sir, with the present calls, assuming, let's operate on the level of assumption, assuming that we want to replace it, do you think you like a different system that perhaps everybody will see immediately and know that you don't have a chance, you have to start finding vacancy elsewhere?
Seriously, I can readily think of any system which can replace what we have all decided on. I can't really see. Because we were using the manual system. Incidentally, this is my 10th year as a headmaster, and I tried the first system for about 3 years or 4 years before we moved into the computerized school selection system. Though the previous one was not exactly the way it has been painted over the years, that headmasters are this and that and that. Those who actually looked at the system very well, you realize that if, for instance, at that time, I was heading Ebenezer Secondary School in Dansoman, and my predecessor at Accra Academy, for instance, if she chose up to a certain aggregate which she could accommodate in her school, and she saw another good result, she would call me, my brother, this is another student I would have loved to choose in Accra Academy, but the place is full. Would you like to take that person as well? And that was how we did it. And within 3 days, we would have finished the selection, and those days we were holding it at Hachimota. But there was this perception, either true or false, that certain heads were taking money. I wouldn't rule that out completely, because as a human institution, you should expect a few people who may do those things. So when we came to look at this system, which I still believe that it is something we must perfect. So to completely wipe that out and say we are going for a new system, I can't readily think of any new system which can evolve, except that we might want to do what I may call a fusion of these two, possibly some aspect of manual and some aspect of mechanized. But in that case too, where can we draw the line so that at the end of it all, people will not be seen to be influencing unduly the process?
Is the catchment area policy seemingly going in this line?
That is where we may have a problem. Because the little we've seen so far, we've not been able to analyze the figures yet. I've asked my regional chairman to do something, and then I think at the appropriate time, we'll be able to present this at the appropriate forum. What we are seeing is that if you say the catchment area has a particular radius, say 18 kilometers or whatever radius, then it stands to reason that those who will come to that school must come from that area. So if, for instance, you're talking of Accra Academy, where I am, Ubuashi schools are around, and then you may go probably as far as to, Kamishi and those areas. But if you see other students who are several kilometers away from the school, then what is the concept of catchment area are we talking about? That is where, if we are not careful, that will also be fraught towards us. But if that can work perfectly, and as I said, and I want to repeat, it is we, the people involved, who are not allowing the system to work. If they would do it rightly, and we can identify these people properly, there is a scientific way of identifying them, the catchment area, and they constitute the 30%. We must make sure that we are actually bringing the people from the catchment area and not using that in quotes to say catchment area, when catchment area, some of the members who are in the school no longer can be traced to that catchment area. In any case, are we talking of catchment area of the schools which are there, or somebody who is resident in that area and yet is attending school at, say, 15 kilometers away, depending on where the parents are sent him or her to school? Okay, these are some of the fine tuning that we will have to look at as a group and then come out with a solution.
Well, we want to thank you very much, Mr. Samuel Ofurieji. Thanks for getting out of that meeting to speak to us.
Thank you. I'm very grateful.
That is the president of the Conference of Heads of Assisted Secondary Schools, Mr. Samuel Ofurieji. But we still have on the line Mr. Michael Nsua. Mr. Michael Nsua, thanks for holding on. We've heard from the headmaster directly. He thinks that they are freed, and this one really helps them. So how do we perfect the system as is calling for?
You see, my suspicion about the delay this year was when the government insisted that, you know, the 30% should be included. Now, it came at a time when the result had already been released. So it was then that they had to send forms out and so on. And, you know, all this took time because they couldn't have done the selection when they've not got the 30%, you know, cut. And like the headmaster was saying, when we say 30%, what are we talking about? Because even at the time, initially, when we started the computer selection in 2005, we made provision for students who say choose Achimota and will need to compete. So at a point where you have 200 students, you've got 150, and then you have another 200 from which you have to select the 50. We devise something we call the scaling factor. If a candidate from a less endowed school is within the next 200, out of which we are going to select 50, we give, you know, preference to those candidates. That's why we introduce what we call the scaling factor to benefit those children. Later on, we were getting, you know, lists from local areas, and they were actually not local, like the headmaster was pointing out. They present a list to you, and a school in Cape Coast, the list includes people from Tema and so on. So what were we talking about local? Now, I think that if this 30% local area is going to persist, the candidates must choose the school right from the beginning, so that we don't have a situation when they've chosen a school elsewhere and they don't get admission, then they turn around to go and fill another form. All this disturbs the system. So I think if right from the time that they are doing the selection, or they are doing their choices, they should select. I heard the coordinator saying that now the sixth step will be solely for the 30%, so that the school where you are, your sixth preference choice should be a school from your local area. So that if they don't get it for you elsewhere, then they will come and consider. But again, there are candidates within the local area who are also competing. So it is not automatic. They are talking about 30%. So all the candidates who select there will also have to go through a grading, and therefore, before they are selected.
Okay. So it shouldn't be technical that because you come from an area, you are getting that particular school. If it is in a class, that your grade does not get you.
Yeah. Okay. So if 100 people are from the area and they have applied, and the places left is 30, so those 100 will have to be arranged in the order of merit.
Okay.
And the first 30 will be selected. But they have to come from the schools within the locality, and not a list of candidates who, because there are some opinion leaders and they are bringing them from all over the country because they want them to go to Cape Coast schools.
So you believe the system should not be abolished as people are calling for?
No. They shouldn't. I mean, we can't afford to. How can we go back in this computer? We're talking about IT, information technology. So why? If there's any problem with the technology, we need to improve it. But
okay,
we cannot do it manually. No, we can't.
Mr. Michael Enswa, I want to thank you very much for your time this evening.
You're welcome.
That is the former Director General of the Ghana Education Service. He was there when the system was introduced. But we have joining us now Mr. Charles Paka Alute, Head of Public Relations of the Education Service. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir, and good evening to your team and listeners.
Yes. Do you think this year has presented a particular challenging situation?
Hello?
Yes. I'm asking whether you think with the computer selection and placement system, we've had a uniquely challenging situation for this year.
Veritably so. But I must first of all thank the last speaker, Mr. Nsoa, for his insightful contribution. And that is exactly what I feel we must do. You asked the question, yes, particularly this year we've had a very big challenge. And the challenge emanated from the fact that we had to implement the 30% catchment area allocation at a time when candidates had already registered far before we started the implementation. And therefore, we had to send out forms for interested candidates to complete and return to us. It took some time. Therefore, we had to hold on till we've had the 30% before we could map it out from the 100% to get a 70%. That is a general merit placement. Yes, we had challenges.
Yeah. So how do you think we can go through this without necessarily going back?
Yes, exactly. We As I said earlier, we had to implement it at the time registration had already been done. This year, the next year, after the review, Mr. Nsoa has already given the hint that we're going to use that as either the sixth or the seventh choice for candidates, only interested candidates to choose the catchment area as the seventh. We are yet to decide whether it should be the sixth or the seventh. But then, at least at the time that they are doing it, we will be able to map out the 30 because we would have had those who are interested by way of the choice we give them.
Yeah.
Yes, but let me add my voice to what has been said already, that as far as we at the Ghana Education Service is concerned, we have had a lot of calls from parents, especially parents who hitherto would not have had access had it not been for the computer placement, who would not have had admission into our senior high schools and technical institutes. And therefore, we think that it has received popular acclaim. And therefore, it will be premature for any organization or any individual to call for a total abolition of the computerized school selection placement system. What we should do, as I've already hinted, is that after every placement exercise, we do hold reviews to see what challenges we face and how to iron out those challenges. And therefore, that is one. This year, we had the challenge of having to grapple with the 30% catchment area allocation. Aside that, we had a huge technical problem, which fortunately we have been able to rectify. And therefore, we think that what we have to do is to take everybody's view on board during the review, especially the major stakeholders who are calling for the abolition of the computerized system.
Especially
NAT and NAGRAT, especially the Ghana Catholic Bishops Conference, etc.
Yeah, but I'm asking, the other concern is not just with the challenges that came up, but the fact that people are even accusing the service or even those directly in charge of some corruption.
Yeah. You see, in a human society or in a society where there are so much frustration, people come out with all sorts of ideas, especially because they are suspicious, because they could not get their way through. I will not discount the fact that there may be one or two instances, but we do not know that yet because people are just not bringing the evidence. We've asked for the cooperation of people because we, officers, we are sure of, we painstakingly chose people of impeccable integrity. And therefore, if people think that any officer at the CSSVS or at the ministry or at the Ghana Education Service has collected some money before placement or placing a ward in a particular school, please let them come forward. They will be helping the whole nation if they do so. Otherwise, what I'll say is that it is not so much the corruption which is coming from our end, other than the few contractors who are going around because hitherto they had enjoyed the active support of certain heads of institutions because they are old boys, because they may have contributed, and they are the ones who keep collecting the money. I say this because a case came in front of me. Somebody said he gave out money. I thought he was one of the officials, but when we investigated, we realized that the person did not even work at the Ghana Education Service nor at the Ministry of Education. He is somebody who thought he is cozy with a head teacher, and therefore he could have his way through. But this year, the head teachers are not doing admission. It's only the CSSVS.
Yeah. Mr. Pakalote, we'll come back to you briefly, but now we want to move on to a parent who has joined us on the line. Dr. Robert Mensah. He's been working with many young people too. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Dr. Mensah, you've seen how things have gone for this particular year, the concerns being expressed, but all those who are directly involved with the process are saying that this is a process to perfect, not one to abolish. What is your view?
Yes, I share that view. I strongly feel that this process must be perfected, and then we have to seriously punish any culprits who are trying to cause any disaffection amongst people for the program. Whatever it is, when you look at this, the previous time when the school selection was relegated to only the headmasters to decide who they will take to their school, then this is a better one and very participative. I have a feeling that sometimes a lot of noise is made about this also. For some parents, either did not take particular interest in their ward selection, and so they get a shock when they are eventually presented with the reality on the ground that my son, who is and he has been sent to jail school, should we actually make sure that they've taken the correct number or code for the school? And these are the issues. But I think the substantive issue of corruption needs to be looked at so that we do not get that. But it is far, far, far a better system than what previously existed. Parents, students, and the authorities must all gear up and perfect it so that we do not have the problem that we had.
Yeah. So what you suggest should be done by parents even before the awards sit the examinations?
I think parents should show particular interest. They should read the guidelines governing the school selection process, because the guideline will tell you exactly which category of school you can select for your child. And you must also know how it is stated, and you guide your child to state. If you have to say the male and you say the female, the computer cannot recognize our names and know that Robert Mensah is a male. The computer can only know when Robert Mensah, who is a male, she is a male as well. And then to take you to a male school, if in the unlikely event that the computer itself has not been able to identify some male and female, those things can be sorted out, but I don't think that is a clear process. Parents should take particular interest to work with schools. When my children were entering, some of my children were entering secondary school, my wife and I took particular interest. We made sure that we had asked them what they wanted, we had gone to the school and assisted the school to fill it for them. I was there when my boy was selected for pre-tech, no sweat. Then the girl was selected for Wesley Girls, no sweat. And I'll do the same for any of my children if they have to go to school. But if you're a parent and you sit back and you expect that the computer and your children will just select the right thing for you, I'm sure you'll be shocked. Why do you invest in a child and not be interested in where they go to school or committed to it? So that at least if they don't get it, you know that it is not your fault.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Mensah, who is a parent and also works with the UNFPA. But coming back to you, Mr. Charles Fakalote, how do you hope to draw in parents to show active interest?
Yeah, thank you very much. Consistently, after every placement exercise, we do organize what we call the CSSPS Week. And what we do is to make radio, TV appearances. We also use regional coordinators, CSSPS coordinators in the various regions to engage in outreach programs to reach out to the parents and let them understand the mechanism of the system. We do so consistently. One big problem is that parents are just not interested until the awards have reached the stage where they are going to write the exams, or when they have written the exams before they become interested. So now the thrust of our education is going to target parents to be interested in their world education, especially about the computer placement, right from the time they enter the junior high school. So that by the time they reach the third year, where they are going to write the exams, they would have been abreast of all the mechanism, all the challenges involved in the registration process.
We want to thank you very much for your time too, Mr. Fakalote.
You're welcome.
That is the head of public relations of the Ghana Education Service. Behind the news, you are live on Ubuntu 96.5 FM, Radio Central, Volta Star Radio, and Garden City Radio. Behind the news, live on Radio BAR and Ura Radio, together with Radio Upper West and Radio Savannah. Some of your tests. Mohammed Nani Nwa is saying, please, is it now bad to criticize the policy in Ghana? Leave these men of God alone. They only share their views on issues. And Eliasu from Tamale is also saying the CSSPS must be abolished. It is posing a lot of problems in the country. The government must revert to the four-year graduation system of the SHS. And Jeko Womampondao is saying, once the machine is operated by human beings, they are tempted with gifts. There should be periodic changes of the operators of the CSS JKPS, that is JK Woman Pondown. We are moving on to our next story. The debate is still raging as to whether the MPP presidential candidate for election 2012 gathered the courage to condemn the British Prime Minister's position of linking gay rights to budgetary support for some countries. A statement issued by the New Patriotic Party says Nana Akufo-Addo on his recent trip to number 10 Downing Street condemned David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, for trying to impose British values on other sovereign states. But the NDC has questioned the authenticity of the information. Abu Jinapo speaks for the MPP flag bearer and has joined us on the line. Good evening, Abu.
Good evening. Good evening to our cherished listeners.
Can you tell us precisely when Nana Akufo-Addo met the British Prime Minister?
Nana Akufo-Addo met him on Thursday at number 10 Downing Street.
Thursday,
just around Thursday. I'm not too sure about the exact
date. Not the date.
Last week, somewhere around Thursday.
Yeah.
At the number 10 Downing Street in London. That's the official office of the British Prime Minister, David Cameron.
Yeah.
And did have a closed-door meeting with him for 30 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes.
Closed door. So does that mean that you didn't have anyone around in addition to Nana Akufo-Addo?
Oh, there were several people there, several members of Nana Akufo-Addo's delegation. Notable among them is the General Secretary of our party, Kojo Osuafrie, and then also members of the Prime Minister's delegation. When we say closed door, what it means is that it wasn't an interaction which was open to the media.
Mm-hmm.
And that is standard practice. Anywhere in the world, normally political leaders will meet before the cameras and before the media for a brief period and retire into closed-door discussions. So it's standard proceeding anyway.
But you were not directly in the meeting.
Well, I wasn't, but my briefings are unequivocal and unimpeachable.
So can you tell us, some, even though it wasn't open to the press, at least some have left into the press now and it's been discussed, some of the issues that came up?
Well, basically, I think that two prominent issues were discussed. The first had to do with election 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And as you do know, the United Kingdom has been a long-standing partner of Ghana in respect of the conduct of elections in Ghana. And so Nana Akufo-Addo, as the leader of the opposition in Ghana, didn't have a wide range of discussions with the Prime Minister of UK in respect of our election. The other matter, which I guess is quite sensational and has gained a lot of media attention in Ghana here, has to do with the question of homosexuality. And let me be very quick to add this point that for Nana Akufo-Addo and for us in the MPP, we believe that the question of homosexuality is something that Ghanaians are almost unanimous about. I can say without any fear of contradiction that almost about 95% of the Ghanaian people are against homosexuality. So it is nothing extraordinary when a politician or a public figure expresses a stand which is consistent with the sentiments of the Ghanaian people. And that is what Nana Akufo-Addo did exactly in London when he looked into the face and the eyes of David Cameron and told him that the proposition that he made to the effect that African countries should adopt homosexuality or should enact laws which will respect the rights of homosexuals, or if you want, which is to the effect of legalizing homosexuality in Africa, and particularly in Ghana, is one that is contradictory to the values, the traditions and culture of Ghana. And so for him as a politician and for the Ghanaian people, it's a triple no to legalizing homosexuality in Ghana.
But did he outrightly condemn the Prime Minister's stance?
Oh, the word condemn is a word that I will not use. I mean, I don't believe in...
But we've heard chided in some cases.
I'm saying that is your word, and that might be the word of some other people. And I will not...
Coming from your camp.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to articulate our position. I'm saying that I do not believe in the engagement of this discussion vis-a-vis the populist rhetoric, such as condemn, such as, you know, fight, and all of those kinds of words. That's not the kind of language that I want to adopt, and that's not the kind of language that our party adopts. Our position is that the Prime Minister of of Britain has a right to articulate the position of the people of Britain and also to articulate the policy position of his government. The people of Ghana also have a right to articulate the position. The president did articulate the position of his government and, for that matter, the people of this country. The leader of the Ghanaian opposition also has articulated the position of the opposition party in Ghana. It's as simple as that. I don't know about condemning or chiding somebody or anything. The point is that we are against homosexuality. Nana Akufo-Addo is against homosexuality. The MPP is against homosexuality. Nana Addo did not choose any other platform rather than a personal engagement with the Prime Minister of Great Britain. And you looked into his eyes and told him in plain language.
But you've told me you were not there and the media was kept out. So how do you know he looked straight in the eye?
Well,
it's contradictory to your earlier statement.
Let me tell you that position adopted by the communications director, the president, at best can be described as an infantile position. It's quite childish with the greatest of...
Let's keep the language civil. This is a national platform.
Well, if a position adopted by a politician is infantile, that's the way we have...
No, but still, the language is civil, and I insist on that one. I insist on very civil language on this platform.
Well, but I'm just saying, all over the world, including President Mills, when President Mills has closed-door, private, or discussions with other world leaders or other world political figures, okay, and the communication director of the president comes out to articulate what transpired during that meeting, nowhere, anywhere in the world will it be required that a tape recording should be produced before people will believe that such a meeting did take place and that this and that discussion ensued during that meeting. If the position being articulated by my good self now was the wrong position, and that Nana Akufo-Addo did not meet Prime Minister David Cameron, and that he did not express the sentiments that I am claiming he did express in that particular meeting, I believe it wouldn't have lasted for more than 24 hours for number 10 Downing Street to come out with an official communique refuting the purported discussion that we are claiming that Nana Akufo-Addo did have with David Cameron. That is standard practice. It's never done anywhere in the world. And I will not for a second call on the communication director of the president to produce tape recording evidence before I will believe that President Mills had a meeting with, say, the United Nations Secretary General, of which we are told that he's going to meet him somewhere next week, before we believe that this and that is what was discussed. I think it's about time that as a people, and we demand of our government officials to delineate propaganda from governance.
Awujinapo, hello. Just hold on for a while. I'll come back to you. But we have on the line to Benjamin Achina-Brintio of the NDC communication team. Good evening.
Good evening, my brother. How are you?
Fine, thank you. But the questions are being posed. Why is your camp doubting whether Nana Akufo-Addo met with the British Prime Minister?
Thank you, and good evening to your listeners. I think it goes beyond NDC camp asking for or doubting a position by the MPP flag bearer. The point is that we have in this country a number of occurrences. Anytime it does so happen, we saw in the issue of the Ivorian crisis, the new patriotic flag bearer came up loud to insist that Ghana should go to war against Gbagbo, then the embattled leader of Ivory Coast. There have been other issues on economy, other issues on increment. The new patriotic party flag bearer have been so strong and loud. We are completely scandalized that on a sensitive issue such as this one, that one that affects our cultural ethics, one that affects the sensibility of almost everybody, religious leaders, civil society members, people from all corners of our society have openly condemned it. The president of this country took a bold and decisive decision to equally condemn it. Now it comes to the position of the flag bearer of the leading opposition leader to talk. One, he refuses to respect Ghanaians by commenting in Ghana. Now we are told that he goes to have a private meeting. a meeting that nobody heard anything about. Now, get this point. When flag bearer, Prime Minister Cameron made his comment, almost everybody isolated him. You know, flag bearer, Prime Minister Cameron belongs to the Conservative Party. We were expecting the new patriotic party that shares alliance and relationship with that party in UK. That benefits in terms of money, in terms of resources, to openly condemn and actually disassociate themselves from the upcoming Congress which was being hosted in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, but Benjamin.
But let me just learn. In flagrant disregard for public sentiment, he went there in fellowship with Cameron, the same time that he has insulted Ghanaians. And what did we hear? We are hearing that he went there to discuss electoral matters with him. At the time, the man have made open and categorical statement that any money they dish out to Ghanaians is going to be tied to gayism.
Benjamin, hello, Benjamin.
Give us money.
Hello, Benjamin.
The man to give us money. And that money.
Hello, Benjamin. It's a discussion, so you should be able to listen so that I can come in and redirect.
You need to also get me to understand because Abu has had time to talk.
Yes, and that is why I'm asking you a question to clarify something so that you come in.
Please do.
Okay. The other concern is that once the president represents this country and he's spoken about it, there is no need for opposition leader to say something, even though he can also say something. Do you share that sentiment?
My brother, please. The opposition leader is supposed to be a government in waiting. Indeed, their governance is the alternative to that of the NDC. In 2012, we are going to an election to choose between them and us. Now, if you are telling us that when it comes to issues of gayism, because they believe in it, and they want Cameron to use gay money to sponsor our verification, they do not have to make a comment on it, then I am completely scandalized with strong morality to wherever. What are you telling me? You see, when Ghana was going for independence, at the same time, we have people belonging to the Busia tradition going to UK to actually oppose it in the same so-called private meetings. In the 21st century, the UK, during this financial meltdown where the whole of the Eurozone is collapsing, want to find access to come back to Africa, colonize the countries that have found oil, and that they are issuing threats that will make all of us succumb.
Just hold on, Benjamin.
You have opposition leaders creeping under the darkness.
Benjamin, I think you've had a chance. We want to pick a quick response from Abu Jinapo. Hello, Abu.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, you are still on the line. At least you've heard Benjamin.
There are two clarifications here.
Uh-huh.
First of all, I think that you asked a brilliant question, which says that if the president has spoken, will it be necessary for the opposition leader to speak again? But what it is that there are a lot of contradictions when I listen to my friends in the NDC. You recall some time ago when the president came out and said that he's the only president of this country, that there's no other president. And when Nana Akufo-Addo speaks on national issues, they are quick to make the claim that Akufo-Addo wants to assume the presidency of this country when he's not. Today, when it's about homosexuality, the president has spoken on behalf of the government and people of this country. And mind you, Prime Minister David Cameron did not speak as a leader of the Conservative Party. He spoke as the head of the UK government, speaking on behalf of the government of UK and the people of UK. And I believe that the president did speak in the same manner. He did not speak as a leader of the NDC. Yet still, our friends do not have confidence enough to accept their own president's stance on homosexuality. They are not still comfortable and they are not satisfied. They still want Nana Akufo-Addo, whom they claim is not the president of this country, to speak before they are satisfied.
But don't you think, Abu, on this same issue, don't you think that it presents a common front if everybody is speaking with the same voice on particular issues?
But I'm
so the call is also justified.
I'm just about addressing that issue.
Uh-huh.
Before Nana Akufo-Addo complained to the United Kingdom, communicators of the NDC, you know, in the likes of the person that I'm just having this discussion with on the other line, had made the point strongly that Nana Akufo-Addo is traveling to the United Kingdom to meet Prime Minister David Cameron, and that if he does not condemn the culture of homosexuality in our country, hell will break loose if he meets David Cameron.
at the same time, they are, Nana Akufo-Addo has traveled, and there and behold, true to their own prediction, he has met Prime Minister David Cameron, and yet still they are contradicting themselves and taking a position which is dramatically contradictory to the position that they took before Akufo-Addo traveled to the United Kingdom, and doubting that Nana Akufo-Addo did not meet Prime Minister David Cameron. So on what basis were they making the prediction that he was going to meet him anyway before he traveled to the United Kingdom? I think that this question of homosexuality calls for sober mind, it calls for deeper reflection, and that is the position that Akufo-Addo has taken, that we should begin to interrogate even our social fiber as a country. How come that a Ghana that used to be very moral, what has happened to our moral conscience as a society, that we have degenerated to the extent where people can identify themselves as homosexuals? Those are the parameters.
Issues that should still be looked at. Abu Jinafo, we want to thank you very much for your time. But Benjamin, coming back to you, your friend is also presenting the face that this is a common position shared by, I think, government as well as opposition. What do you think?
My brother, let us be very clear in our minds what is happening in our country. The British Prime Minister attacked the sensibility of Ghanaians to impose gay rights on us. All that the opposition leader can do is to go and engage him in a private conversation which nobody can verify. Now, what we are saying is that the same time that he went there, he should have rather isolated him, boycotted the meeting. We are told he went to discuss electoral matters with him. Now, the British have told us that any time they give us a penny, it must come with gay rights. Now that Nana Akufo-Addo is discussing our electoral fortunes with Cameron, we are saying that he is giving the man the promise to endorse gay rights when he becomes president.
That is what your friend said.
This is the same thing for our independence. They oppose it by going back quietly under the guise of so-called private meeting. So why can't they give us the recordings of what they discuss? If they are telling us that from now onwards, any statement that comes up from the president, it represents all of us, our views, then why were they breaking our eardrums about the issues of Ivory Coast, about the issues of petrol increase, about the issues of the economy? These guys are pushing double standards. And we need to... they are just making a lot of noise. They are not saying...
Well, I should have read you. I guess on this issue, we really must hold on. But
the man says he wants to impose gay rights and you are going for his money.
And that is what they say. They are also doubting. But for now, I want to thank you very much for joining the discussion team. Benjamin Achinabrintiu is a member of the communications team of the NDC. You are live on Unique 95.7 and around the world on www.gbcghana.com. This one from Kojo Akins, Cape Coast. It says, Prime Minister Cameron is interested in Nana's electoral victory. And Nana knows why. There is no way he and Nana will speak against the British Prime Minister. Kojo Akins from Cape Coast sent in that one. And moving on to our next story here, the operation of the electronic media has been evolving over the past few years. From black and white systems to colored and now pay television, viewers have been enjoying some variety. The information, however, is that without the necessary additions, some people might be left out of television viewing altogether. By 2015, it is expected that Ghana would have moved from its present analog system to a digital one, according to a requirement by the International Telecommunications Union. Recently, however, the government stepped in to stop the importation of set-top boxes. Why was this step taken, and what does the present digital migration imply for operators as well as viewers? Dr. Adami Moro is a member of the Digital Broadcasting Migration Committee, and we have him joining us in the studio to look at the issues. Dr. Moro, you are warmly welcome.
Thank you.
Digital migration, people hear jingles and know. What does it really mean?
Well, what it basically means is that, what has provoked it is the movement of our television transmission. If you recall, in 1965, Ghana had gone, has started TV transmission, basically GVC. I recall when we were children in Chogu. We used to walk from the village to go and watch TV at the local DVC station. And that was the black and white era. In fact, it wasn't live. The programs used to come 24 hours. And you know, those days, the STC was very efficient. So sometimes the tapes would be sent there and then they would be played. We'll watch the news and then there will be some movie we'll watch, you know, as village boys. Now, that was black and white TV. Then by 1985, where GBC went color, it means we moved the Kunkunte. People used to call it Kunkunte or some other names. We went color, and in fact, that color television spread or coverage extended up to the early 2000s, when finally we were able to get nationwide coverage virtually. And GBC has been proud of it, you know. But that mode of transmission we call analog, because you get one program and then you have to run on a channel. If it is band 3, it's channel, there will be one of the channel between 5, channel 5 to 12. Or if it is band 4 and 5, it will be between channel 21 to 69. So that is analog television. Now, what is happening is that you know that there has been rapid development in the field of technology, especially digital signal processing. So these signals we call analog, we are now able to convert them into digital. That is 1010, like we have in mobile telephony. You recall that when mobile telephony started, we had this big first generation mobile phone when Tigo came in. I think, what was their original name? Those kind of big sets. Yeah. That way you couldn't send text, it was just call. But you realize that as soon as they digitalized the mobile network, we had the second generation, the 2.5 generation, third generation. Currently, we are moving towards the fourth generation, where we have the phone now. It's a multimedia device. It is a TV receiver. It is a data processor, a whole lot of things. I mean, the mobile phone now, it has changed just because of digitalization. So the same thing is happening in TV. Yeah, whilst we are maintaining the same bandwidth, that is for band 3, about 7 megahertz, or band 4 or 5, 8 megahertz, it has been maintained. But because the data, your picture is now processed, it has become 1010, you know, we now be able to use advanced signal processing to reduce the size of the data which can be transmitted, you know, so that the receiver at the other end would, so that when doing that, we call it coding. Mm-hmm. And then your receiver becomes a decoder. Mm-hmm. Whatever process went through for it to go through the transmitting medium in a smaller form, when it gets to the receiver or the decoder or integrated digital receiver, it does a reverse process. But the advantage now is that because you are still maintaining the same bandwidth, that means, for instance, an analog channel will normally take about 250 megabit per second to transmit. Okay. Now, using MPEG-4 or, you know, motion picture expert group type of technology, MPEG-2, you are able to reduce that same signal to about 3 megabit per second. Yeah. Now, if you go to MPEG-4, you cannot even transmit it at 1.5 megabit per second.
But what does it mean for the viewer?
For the viewer, it means that there is your receiver now has to have a little bit complicated device attached to it. You know, one of the choices technology have done was to design a new TV system altogether. I said, no, we don't want to worry the people. Instead of having a full integrated digital receiver, you now have a patch or a decoder, mm-hmm. which works in conjunction with your current analog signal at TV. So you don't have to discard your analog TV. You maintain the analog TV, but now go for a relatively cheaper set-top box or a decoder, which now decodes, that it converts the digital signal into the analog format for your TV, yeah. so that you can view. But the advantage here is that instead of that channel carrying only one program, it's carrying about 10 programs. Yeah. In fact, currently the system we have in GBC, which we are using the smart decoder, takes as much as 10 program. In fact, they can go higher.
Someone saying perhaps they want to watch only GTV. They don't care about the rest. Does that mean if they don't
care? The case is nobody will tell you that. The first time mobile phone comes. You are here to tell me, show me somebody who doesn't want to use a mobile phone.
So
now there's nobody. In fact, in the house, even the channels are not sufficient for people.
So I'm just asking that question. The person would not perhaps like to have a set-top box. Does that mean that person cannot watch TV after?
No, when we demonstrate it, I'm telling you, when we demonstrate it, he will even ask for more. That is the nature of a man, a human being. Man and woman, we are a curious group. We are never satisfied. I wish that I could be listening to watching the Gwanu programs all the time and I can change to Hausa, I can change to Arabic. I mean, we are never satisfied with whatever information we have. All that you have to the technology must be affordable, it must be easy to use. And that is what the set-top box is going to bring about. It's going to be easy to use. You have more, you have electronic programming guides. You know, you can pull down. In fact, in some situations, you'll be able to even video on demand.
Yeah.
And there will be a situation where you pull down a favorable program from a broadcaster. I mean, the more is coming.
Quickly, because of our time.
Yeah.
Recently, government said the importation of the set-top boxes should stop for some time. Why?
No, it wasn't stopping altogether. We said that the importation of DVB-T, because we have the first generation digital video broadcast system, the current one we are operating, we call DVB-T.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that the efficiency is lower than the next generation, that's DVB-T2. So what the government came out to say was that the importation of DVB-T decoders, MPEG-4, should cease. Instead, if you are bringing in any decoder at all, it should be DVB-T2, MPEG-4. Some people say H.264. That is another way of, referring to that standard. And in any case, all those who want to import products, they should contact the National Communication Authority. Their webpage is available. There are people there you could contact. And as regards our migration process, we are in advanced stage. Currently, we are doing evaluation. And it's very interesting because we are going to get value for money. We have invited first 16 companies who are showing interest. Finally, 7 showed submitted bids. And it's very interesting. And that is what our Director General was talking about. That if you delay, there's no advantage in delaying this migration process. Because nobody is going to stay to manufacture old analog equipment for you. They can only go to their warehouses, clear them. And you know the problem we are having with our current transmitters. The big boys have moved.
Mm-hmm.
So we want all so Ghana and
it's
Africa.
It's like not getting black and white television sets to buy.
Exactly. No, you don't get that.
As the AUB conference continues, so we'll try to get you to explain a few more issues.
Yes, sir. Yes,
sir. Dr. Imori, I want to thank you very much. Dr. Adam Imori is a member of the Digital Broadcasting Migration Committee and Assistant Director of Engineering. That is where we wrap it up. But some of your tests, some schools were giving more students than they requested for and must be investigated. A Japo from Kumasi said so. And Apusi Garbet at CBUDSY campus, you send a CEOs, Jawaharlal Nehru, former India Prime Minister, once said, "We cannot get hold of a modern tool and still have an ancient mind." From this wise statement made, we should try to perfect the current placement system to commensurate the needs of students' choice. And Abu Duboli from WAD, "The computer placement system, to me, does not have a problem, but course subjects that one must pass before getting school. Why can't we consider all subjects important?" And that is where we wrap it all up. On behalf of our technical crew of George Kwaku and Bobby Nikwe, production crew of Christopher Seed, Bright Agama and Ibrahim Asari, and our summarizer Ibrahim Kwati, my name is Kingsley Obinchere.